Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us on this May Day is Silvia Allegretto, a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at the University of California, Berkeley. She has co-authored several editions of The State of Working America, and her research interests include long-term unemployment, family budgets, teacher pay, public employee compensation, low-wage labor markets, inequality, and minimum wages. Welcome to Background Briefing, Silvia Allegretto.
Yes, Ian, great to be here.
And teachers are on strike in red states. They're on strike now. They've been demonstrating for several days now in Arizona, also in Colorado, and before that in West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Kentucky. And you have done a study. We're told that the lowest paid teachers in the country are in Arizona and Colorado, but you've done a study that's far more accurate and far more relevant. So tell us about the methodology where you pointed out in Arizona's teachers earn just 63% on the dollar compared with other college graduates, and the gap is 79 cents in Kentucky, 67 cents in Oklahoma, and 75 cents in West Virginia. Why is that a better metric?
Well, because the figures that you're stating from my study are actually done comparing teachers within states, so with other workers within each state, because we know there's a big difference in pay just based on cost of living. So, for instance, the cost of living in California is much higher than Mississippi, so all else being equal, you would expect teachers in California to be paid more. What matters is kind of what's happening within the state. So those numbers are taking into account, you know, how are teachers faring compared to other similarly educated workers within their states. And as you correctly identified, my work shows that the states where we've had a lot of the walkouts, Arizona, Colorado, Oklahoma, West Virginia, have some of the largest teacher pay gaps in the country.
But overall, your study points out that teachers' pay, accounting for inflation, actually fell by $30 per week from 1996 to 2015. That's a national statistic, right?
Right. So, you know, what we did and what we've been doing for over a decade now, and this is with my partner Larry Michel from the Economic Policy Institute, we went back all the way to 1960 in the first book that we put out over a decade ago. We showed that in 1960, teachers, who, by the way, were mostly women, which is the same today, did fairly well. They actually did about 15% better than comparable workers. Because don't forget, in 1960, women didn't have a lot of choice. Many occupations weren't open to women. So the good news is that women who were in teaching did pretty well. The bad news is they were kind of a captive labor pool. So what we show is there's like a, you know, we went from a 15% you know, positive for teachers to now it's about a 17% negative. So the teacher penalty went from a positive to from a premium over the last several decades to a penalty. And that penalty for men, which probably explains why the share of teachers who are male hasn't changed very much in decade, is that teaching penalty for men is about 25%. So what we've showed is a long-term trend that is getting worse.
Well, interestingly enough, I don't know whether you watched the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which became controversial, Silvia, because of the comedian Michelle Wolf. I thought one of the most telling lines that she had in her comedy, which was quite biting and I think extremely relevant, she said, you know, I support Donald Trump's call to arm teachers in this country because that way teachers can sell their guns for school supplies.
That's right.
And I thought, that really gets to the heart of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've heard that. Look, the truth is that we can't adequately invest in our students without adequate investment in buildings, books, supplies, staff, and that includes teachers. And that's what, you know, these teachers in most of these walkouts are asking for. They're not out there on the front lines just fighting for themselves. They're fighting for overall funding, and in a lot of cases, to replace funding that is far behind what it even was 10 years ago, especially in places like Oklahoma, Kentucky, Arizona, West Virginia. You know, state funding is well below what it was even a decade ago, because they know without adequate investments in them, but also, again, the buildings, the books, the supply, there's just no way we can have a good public school sector. So I think it's really telling that they're trying to bring everybody up with them, and you know, in the face of what has been enormous cuts, especially cuts that were ratcheted up post Great Recession. At the same time, we know, which we've talked a lot about, a lot of these states have given huge tax cuts to corporations and to millionaires and billionaires as their schools start to crumble.
And again, I'm speaking with Sylvia Allegretta, who's a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at the University of California, Berkeley. She has co-authored several editions of The State of Working America, and her research interests include long-term unemployment, family budgets, teacher pay, public employee compensation, low-wage labor markets, inequality, and minimum wages. And it does seem that, at least to my mind, there's a connection here between the Republican takeover of the state legislatures back in 2010, at the time of the census, and so much of what's happened since has been the agenda of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is set up by the Koch brothers. And basically, they've gotten all of these Republican legislatures in these red states to go along with the Koch brothers' libertarian agenda. And of course, the Koch brothers, I don't imagine, for the life of me, I don't understand that kind of slash and burn mentality. I know they obviously went to private schools and don't have any connection to public schools, and that is the case with the current Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education. They don't have a connection to public schools, and they're busily trying to take money away from public schools to give them to charter schools, which on the surface, there's no logic to that, because if your public schools are in trouble, the last thing you do is take money away from them. But that's what they're doing. So do you see this in the light of people? And maybe you can answer this question that kind of bothers me, and I can't for the life of me figure it out, why these plutocrats are doing what they're doing. Do they want Americans to be stupid? I mean, you'd think you'd want an educated workforce if you're a plutocrat.
Well, that's right, but I think it really goes, you know, just to the broader notion that we're demonizing public sector workers, as you pointed out. A lot of this started out with the typical what happened in Wisconsin with Scott Walker, where you know the economy was blowing up due to the wizards on Wall Street, due to deregulation. It was blowing up all over the world, and he attacked who? Not Wall Street, not that institution. He attacked public sector workers. And I think it was working for a while. The public, the general public, was like, "Oh, I don't have benefits anymore. My pay isn't going anywhere. You know, why are these teachers doing so well?" Well, of course, my work has shown teachers have been falling further and further behind, but so has the average worker. So what was happening is this narrative of pitting private sector worker against public sector worker, but I think it's not happening anymore. People are seeing that anywhere there is a pot of public sector money, there is a constituency in this country who you've just mentioned that want to make sure that it goes through private sector hands as a form of profit, one way or another. That's why we have this push for charter schools. So the defunding of the public schools is exactly what it's supposed to do. It will make them worse, and then that strengthens their argument that they need more private sector and school choice, which is exactly what I wouldn't agree with. We need to just fix the public school systems, which are, you know, they're not perfect and they never have been, but to do what we're doing is just going to dismantle public education as we know it. And so what I think has happened, though, is that the general public is kind of seeing, and we've seen this with that they're pretty much on board and backing these teachers in these red states, in these right-to-work states, because they've seen over the last decade and even longer the books that their kids are bringing home that are woefully out of date. They're seeing schools that are crumbling. They're being asked to pay more for their kids to be able to participate in sports or to be in the band, having to pay more money for an instrument or to be in art class. And I think that finally they're seeing this kind of narrative that they have been pushing, that the problem is public sector workers, that it hasn't been right. And it's never going to do private sector workers who are unionized at, you know, about 6% now. It's never going to do private sector workers to turn on their public sector counterparts to make their lot in life better. What happens is what we really need is to get workers in general on board and fight for these worker rights, to fight for these walkouts. It should be a birthright in this country for workers who want to unionize, to form unions, and to have strong unions instead of the weak unions they have in the South. Don't forget, in these right-to-work states, these teachers were not even allowed to walk out. They were not allowed to strike. They did it anyway. They were wildcat strikes in some instances. And so I think in one respect, we're like, wow, why is this happening in the South? In another respect, as my work shows, it's like it's gotten that bad that they were left, you know, without anything else to do except to act illegally, to walk out, and to bring attention to their plight.
Well, it's interesting that the richest American, I believe, is Jeff Bezos. He's worth about $131 billion, according to Forbes, and he did an interview the other day with the Spiegel in Germany, where he said that he was going to deploy much of his financial wealth from his holdings in Amazon into space travel and going to Mars. So it's an extraordinary thing that the richest man in the world can't even imagine paying his workers more or paying his fair share of taxes, but rather sending up these rockets into space as monuments of his wealth. And the same thing is happening, of course, with Elon Musk. So what explains that? I mean, we're thinking of these guys as the good billionaires as opposed to the reactionary people like the Koch brothers that are still making their wealth out of extraction industries. And, of course, the entire Trump administration has been turned over to the Koch brothers and others in the extraction industries in coal, like Blankenship, who's running for the Senate in West Virginia, and others. I was just, interesting enough, Sylvia, I was just reading the lyrics to the Internationale, the anthem of the International Workers of the World, on this May Day. This is one of the verses that caught my attention. Behold them seated in their glory, the kings of mine and rail and soil. What have you read in all their story but how they plundered toil? Fruits of the workers' toil are buried in strongholds of the idle few. In working for their restitution, the men will only claim their due. If only that were happening, right?
Then right.
The reverse is happening under Trump. He's enabling the extraction industries to exploit not just the land,
that's right,
but also the workers.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I'm not sure if they're good billionaires or bad billionaires. I just want them to pay their fair share in taxes. You know, the tax burden 30 years ago, about a third of all federal taxes came via corporate taxation. Today it's less than it's less than 10%. The tax burden has been shifted onto the backs of basically typical workers as they try to cut any benefits for these typical workers, such as now they're trying to cut food stamps. Look, we have plenty of money in this country. We're one of the richest countries in the world. We should always keep that in mind, because the idea that we can't afford this, but we can afford, like you say, to have individuals now that are subsidizing space travel, well, that's fine. But first you have to help subsidize everything else in the country before you're allowed to do that. Your money should go through the public sector in the form of taxation, and then you can do with it whatever you would like.
Well, just to go back to the comedian that's gotten so much flack from the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Michelle Wolf, you know, the last line in her comedy riff that's upset so many Republicans in the White House and also the Washington Press Corps, her last line in parting was, "And the people in Flint are still drinking poisonous water." So
yes, I mean, and amazing that nobody's really talking about that. That in some respects was the most important line she said all night. In the United States of America, for this long, and it has been a long time, that it happened to begin with is unbelievable. That it's still going on is criminal. And again, this goes through investments in the public sector. This is going through, you know, the plutocracy, the haves and the have-nots. And it's just really shameful what is going on in Flint, Michigan.
Well, just in closing, do you see this as an opportunity for the Democrats in November, since these are red states? I mean, some of them have drunk in the Kool-Aid that Donald Trump has stolen the white working class, although this seems to fly in the face of that theory.
Well, I really don't know. All I can say is that these teachers, and I don't think we're going to stop here at Colorado. I think there's going to be more actions across more states. And, you know, the people who are running for office in them states and certainly federally are going to have to start listening to these teachers. And I think they're going to bring a lot of other workers along with them as we keep talking like you and I are about the issues here. What are we really dealing with? And putting this in the context of, you know, ever-growing inequality and ever, you know, growing tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. There's a price to be paid, and part of that price is in public education. Our children, the most important people for that will be running this country in the future, they need those investments. And so it's been kind of amazing what is happening and inspirational what's happening. Because in this country, the right of collective action, the right of collective bargaining is one of the only things that is going to help to reverse or even mitigate the vast inequality and growing inequality that we have in this country. We need to have worker voice. We can't let the plutocrats run away with everything.
Well, Sylvia Allegretto, I thank you for joining us on this May Day.
Thank you so much, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Sylvia Allegretto, who is a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at the University of California, Berkeley. She has co-authored several editions of The State of Working America, and her research interests include long-term unemployment, family budgets, teacher pay, public employee compensation, low-wage labor markets, inequality, and minimum wages. We're going to take a brief station break and be back examining further the erosion of America's middle class, with 63% of Americans one paycheck away from the street and unable to deal with a $500 emergency.